Welcome to Zichu Daf Siman, member by Avram Goldar, and today we're in Sefer Shkalim, Daf Chaf of the 8th Parak, Kol Arukin. So the three Dafs are going to focus on number 1. The Mishnah on Daf Chaf Amud Aleph stated that the 6th of the 7 to 9 basin was, all partially ma'olim ba'afar, regarding the Paraduma, that it should not be me'ila when using its ashes. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman said in the name of Yochanan that it would seem from the Mishnah that Midoraisa, the ashes should be subject to me'ila, but the Rabbanim regozes that they should not be. Now, this contradicts a braisa that states that the rice of the par itself is subject to me'ila, but not its ashes. So Rabbi Albo answered that at first, since the ashes were not subject to me'ila, people would debase it and put it on their wounds for medicinal purposes. The Rabban therefore decreed that the ashes should be subject to me'ila the Rabbanan. Once the decree accomplished its purpose and people became restrained in using them, the Rabbanan regoza that the ashes should not be subject to me'ila, following the deraisa din. Point number 2, the opening mission of the 8th parak states that according to Rabbi Meir, Kol Rukin Hamnisoyim B'Yushalayim Tahorin, all spittle that is found in Yushalayim is presumed Tahor, Chutz Mishel Shuka Elyon, except for what's found in the upper marketplace. Now regarding the upper marketplace, Rabbi Yavin said in the name of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Katzran Shel Nachrim Hayasham, there was a laundry operated by Nachrim there. Since Nachrim are deemed to have the Tuma of Zavim, which means that their spittle is Tamei, and the upper marketplace is frequented by many Nachrim, any spittle found there was considered Tamei. Rabbi Chanina said, Arodes Hayunucharin Sham, they used to spear wild donkeys there. Since the butchers were Nachrim, their spittle was considered Tamei. Rabbi Shuben Levi said that as they were spearing wild donkeys to feed the lions in the king's military, the Oli Regalim were passing through on the way to Yerushalayim, and they waded knee-deep in the blood. The Rabban didn't tell them to refrain from appearing in the base of Migdash. So we see from here that Dam Nevela does not convey Tuma. And the Gemara begins a lengthy discussion regarding the status of Dam Nevela. And point number 3, the Gemara addresses the different descriptions for the handiwork of the parochas. One pasuk states it's ma'aseh rokim, the work of an embroiderer, and another pasuk states it's ma'aseh choshev, the work of a designer. The difference is that the work of the embroiderer only has one face, whereas the work of a designer has two faces. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemi disagree about what the one face and two faces means. One says that ma'aseh rokim, which had one face, means that the fabric had a line embroidered on one side and was blank on the other, whereas ma'aseh choshev, which had two faces, had a line woven on each side. The other one said that Maisa Rokim, that had one face, had a line embroidered on each side. The Tikkun Chadin explains that one face means the identical face. Maisa Choshev had a line embroidered on one side and an eagle woven on the other side, and that's why it was described as having two faces. So once again, the 3 points are number 1. The Mishnah Daf Chaf Amud Aleph stated that the 6th of the 7 to 9 basin was Oha partially Yemolim Ba'afara, regarding the Paraduma, that there should not be Me'ila when using its ashes. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman said in the name of Yochanan that it would seem from the Mishnah that Midoraisa, the ashes should be subject to Me'ila, but the Rabbanim regozes that they should not be. And this contradicts a Braisa that states that Midoraisa, the par itself, is subject to Me'ila, but not its ashes. Rabbi Albo answered that at first, since the ashes were not subject to Me'ila, people would debase it and put it on their wounds for medicinal purposes. The Rabban therefore decreed that the ashes should be subject to Me'ila the Rabbanan. Once the decree accomplished its purpose and people became restrained in using them, the Rabbanan regoza that the ashes should not be subject to Me'ila, following the deraisa din. Point number 2, the opening mission of the 8th parak states that according to Rabbi Meir, Kol Rokin and Nisayim by Yerushalayim Tahor in all spittle that is found in Yerushalayim is presumed Tahor, Chutz Mishel Shuka Elyon, except for what's found in the upper marketplace. Regarding the upper marketplace, Rabbi Avin said, and then Rabbi Shuben Levi, Katzran Shel Nachrim Hayusham, there was a laundry operated by Nachrim there. Now, since Nachrim are deemed to have the Tuma of Zavim, which means that their spittle is Tamei, and the upper marketplace is frequented by many Nachrim, any spittle found there was considered Tamei. Rabbi Chanina said, Arodes Hayunucharin Sham, they used to spear wild donkeys there. And since the butchers were Nachrim, their spittle was considered Tamei. Rabbi Shuben Levi said that as they were spearing wild donkeys to feed the lions in the king's military, the Oli Regalim were passing through on their way to Yerushalayim, and they waded knee-deep in the blood. The Rabban did not tell them to refrain from appearing in the base of Migdash. So we see from here that Dam Nevela does not convey Tumah. And the Gemara begins a lengthy discussion regarding the status of Dam Nevela. And point number 3, the Gemara addresses the different descriptions for the handiwork of the parochas. One pasuk states, it is Maisa Rokim, the work of an embroiderer. And another pasuk states, it's Maisa Choshev, the work of a designer. The difference is that the work of the embroiderer only has one face, whereas the work of a designer has two faces. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemi disagree about what this means, the one face and the two face. One says, the Maisa Rokim means that the fabric had a line embroidered on one side and was blank on the other side, and therefore only had one face, whereas Maisa Choshev had a line woven on each side, and therefore it had two faces. The other one said, the Maisa Rokim had a line embroidered on each side, and Tikkun Chadin explains that one face means the identical face. Maisa Choshev had a lion embroidered on one side and an eagle woven on the other side, and that's why it was described as having two faces. All right, so now we're going to our Simfer Daf Chaf Aleph, and our standard simon is a car. And the reason why Chaf Aleph is a car, because people from Boston, Bostonians, pronounce it a ka, a ka. So Chaf Aleph is a ka, otherwise known as a car. Here goes. The ka, with the announcement sign that the Rabban instituted no more ma'ila on Par Duma ashes, and that waded through the spittle-ridden and blood-filled upper marketplace, where wild donkeys were speared, was full of horrified women on their way to embroider and design the parochas. Once again in slow motion. The ka, ka, that must mean we're on Daf Chaf Aleph. The ka, with the announcement sign that the Rabban instituted no more ma'ila on Par Duma ashes, which reminds the Mishnah Daf Chaf Amud Aleph stated that the sixth of the seven Tanai basin was, regarding the Par Duma, that there should not be ma'ila when using its ashes. Now Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman said in the Rabbi Yochanan that it would seem from the Mishnah that midiraisa the ashes should be subject to ma'ila, but the Rabban goes that they should not be. This contradicts a braisa that states midiraisa the par itself is subject to ma'ila, but not its ashes. So Rabbi Elbal answered that at first, since the ashes were not subject to me'ila, people would debase it and put it on their wounds for medicinal purposes. The Rabbanan therefore decreed that the ashes should be subject to me'ila, the Rabbanan. Once the decree accomplished its purpose and people became restrained in using them, the Rabbanan goes there that the ashes should not be subject to me'ila, following the deraisa din. So the ka, with the announcement sign that the Rabbanan instituted no more me'ila on Par Duma ashes, and that waded through the spittle-ridden, blood-filled upper marketplace where wild donkeys were speared, which reminds us that the opening mission of the 8th Perek states that according to Rabbi Meir, all spittle that's found in Yerushalayim is presumed tahor, except for that what's found in the upper marketplace. Now regarding the upper marketplace, Rabbi Avin said in the Rabbi Shubin Levi that there was a laundry operated by Nachim there, and since Nachim are deemed to have the Tumah of Zavim, which means their spittle is tamei, and the upper marketplace is frequented by many Nachrim, any spittle found there was considered tamei. Rabbi Chanina said they used to spear wild donkeys there. Since the butchers were Nachrim, their spittle was considered tamei. Rabbi Shubin Levi said that just as they were spearing wild donkeys to feed the lions in the king's military, the Oi Regalim were passing through on their way to Yerushalayim, and they waded knee-deep in the blood. Their Rabban didn't tell them to refrain from appearing in the base of Migdash. So we see from here that Dam Nevela does not convey Tumah. The Gemara begins a lengthy discussion regarding the status of Dam Nevela. So the Ka, with the announcement sign that the Rabban instituted no more Me'ila on Par Duma ashes, and that waded through the spittle-ridden and blood-filled upper marketplace where wild donkeys were speared, was full of horrified women on their way to embroider and design the parochas, which reminds us. The Gemara addresses the different descriptions for the handiwork of the parochas. One pasuk states, it's Maisa Rokem, a work of an embroiderer. And another pasuk states, it was Maisa Choshev, the work of a designer. And the difference is that the work of the embroiderer has only one face, whereas the work of a designer has two faces. Rav Yudin and Rabbi Nechemi disagree about what this means, one face and two face. One says, Maisa Rokem means the fabric had a line embroidered on one side and was blank on the other. Therefore, it was only one face, whereas Maisa Choshev had a line woven on each side, and therefore it was two faces. The other one said Maisa Rokem had a line embroidered on each side. The Tikkun Chatan explains that one face here means the identical face. Maisa Choshev had a line embroidered on one side and an eagle woven on the other side, and that's why it was described as having two faces. So once again, the ka with the announcement sign that the Rabban instituted no more me'ila on Par Duma ashes, and that waded through the spittle-ridden and blood-filled upper marketplace where wild donkeys were speared, was full of horrified women on their way to embroider and design the parochas. All right, now it's time for a four-block back chazara. Daf Yud Zayin. So the simmer Daf Yud Zayin is a used car. So here goes. The used car salesman. Used car salesman. That must mean we're on Daf Yud Zayin. The used car salesman who saw his lot of used cars get carried away in a raging stream that emanated from a temple's inner sanctum, which reminds us that the next mission identified one of the 13 temple gates where people would prostrate themselves as the Shar HaMayim, the water gate. The Tanakhama says it was called the Shar HaMayim because through it they would bring the flask of Nisach HaMayim during Sukkos. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says Bo HaMayim Mefachim, through it the waters trickle, Vasinu Yos Yotzim Mitachas Mifsan HaBayis, and are destined to issue forth from beneath the threshold of the house, referring to the Kodesh Kadoshim. The Gemara brings a description from Savior Cheskel where the Navi shown a vision of the stream getting deeper and deeper until it becomes a raging river that the Navi cannot cross and not even a large ship could cross. The Malbim suggests the water symbolizes the flow of Torah knowledge and faith that is destined to flow from the base of Migdash in the future. So the used car salesman who saw his lot of used cars get carried away in a raging stream that emanated from a temple's inner sanctum threw their keys away in despair, which reminds us, when Yehoyachin Melch Yehuda heard that Nebuchadnezzar had summoned him, he took the keys to the base of Migdash and went up to the roof of the Heichal and said to Kadosh Baruch Hu, Ribbono Shel Olam, in the past we were faithful to you and your keys were given over to us. Now that we're not faithful, your keys are hereby returned to you, according to one Amora. Zarkin va'od lo yardu, he threw them up to Shemaim and they have not come down, whereas according to another Amora, the likeness of a hand emerged from Shemaim, which took the keys from his hand. When all the noblemen of Yehuda saw this, they went up to the rooftops, jumped off, and died. So the used car salesman who saw his lot of used cars get carried away in a raging stream that emanated from a temple's inner sanctum threw their keys away in despair, and they landed on top of marble and gold tables full of warm bread. Which reminds us, the next mission teaches that among the 13 shulchanos in the base of Middash, there was a marble shulchan where they placed the lechem upon him when it was brought in, and a gold shulchan for the breads that were taken out, shemalim b'kodesh v'lo moridin, for we ascend in matters kedusha and we do not descend. There was also the golden shulchan in the heichal upon which the lechem upon him would lay continually. The Gemara brings a brisa that the first shulchan was made of silver, not marble, but it was said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that our Mishnah holds that it was not a shulchan of silver, because silver heats up that which is placed on it and causes the bread to spoil. Even though one in the 10 nisim in the base of Middash was that the bread never spoiled, Rabbi Shubin Levi says, Ein maskirin maisa nisim. No proof may be cited for miracles, meaning that we may not rely upon a nes. Daf Yud Ches, so the simmer Daf Yud Ches is a chuppah. So here goes. The 10 menorahs lined up in front of the chuppah. Chuppah, that must mean we're on Daf Yud Ches. The 10 menorahs lined up in front of the chuppah, which reminds us, it was taught in a brisa, Esen menorahs, Asa Shlomo, Shlomo Melech made 10 menorahs for the base of Mikdash, 5 to the right of Moshe's menorah, and 5 to its left, and some chokas based on psukim, whether they were all lit or only Moshe Rabbeinu's was lit. So the 10 menorahs lined up in front of the chuppah, each had a block of wood the size of a truncated amma on top. Which reminds the next Mishnah states, Shoshasar Shofaris Hayibah Mikdash, there were 13 collection chests in the base of Mikdash, and one of them was titled Eitzim for the donations of wood to be brought on the Mizbech. Reb Shmuel Bar Yitzchak said that since the site of the pyre on the Mizbech built by Moshe was only an amma by an amma, therefore the blocks of wood were only the length of a truncated amma. The Karbana Eda explains that if the blocks were a full amma, they would protrude slightly into the adjacent area on top of the Mizbeach, which was designated as the Kohanim's walkway. So the 10 menorahs lined up in front of the chuppah, each had a block of wood the size of a truncated amma on top, and were burning donated lavona the size of a kometz, which reminds us. The Mishnah say that if someone said, Hare alai lavona, if it's hereby incumbent on me to bring lavona, he may not bring less than a kometz. The Gemara brings a source for this ruling, Nemar Kan Askara, and stated here about the lavona that is offered on the Mizbech as part of the Lechem Apanim service memorial portion, and it's stated there regarding the Mincha that's offered on the Mizbech memorial portion. So just as the Askara with regard to the flower of a Mincha is a full Kometz, so to the Askara mentioned here with regard to the Levona offered with the Lechem Apanim should be a full Kometz. And from here we derive that the standard amount of a Levona offered with a Mincha is a Kometz, and if Levona is offered by itself as an independent offering without the person specifying an amount, he must bring at least a kometz.
Daf Yud Tes. The symbol for Daf Yud Tes is a yacht. A yacht. So here goes.
The coin collectors on the yacht tour. Yacht. That must mean we're on Daf Yud Tes. The coin collectors on the yacht tour were having a blast trying to figure out which chest a drop coin belonged to, which reminds us that the next Mishnah states, Moshe Nimsu ben Hashkalim v'Nadava. If coins are found between the chest mark Shkalim and the chest mark Nadava, which is for voluntary communal offerings, if they're close to the Shkalim, they should be deposited into Shkalim. If they're close to Nadava, they should be deposited into Nadava. Maxila Maxila Yipu Nadava. If they're equidistant between the two, they should fall into the Nadava chest. After stating more cases, the Mishnah concludes, the Akral Hochin Achra Kar B'Haka. We follow the closer one, even to be lenient, mechzel, mechzel, lachmer. When they are equidistant, we are required to be more machmer. The Gemara explains that there are some who say that the reason that the Nadava takes precedence over Shkalim is that if the coins were deposited into Shkalim, they might not end up being used and become part of the Shi'ar HaLishka and will be used for non-sacrificial purposes such as repairing the walls of Yerushalayim. Others say the reason is that a coin found equidistant between Shkalim and Nadava is like the case of one who died after separating a shekel, where the lacha is that the shekel is deposited in the Nadava chest. So the coin collectors on the yacht were having a blast trying to figure out which chest a drop coin belonged to, and listening to the lecture on Maisu Sheni status of lost coins in Yerushalayim, which reminds the next Mishnah states, Moshe Nimsu Ibnei Sochri Behemelo Maisu, coins that are found in front of the premises of animal dealers in Yerushalayim are always assumed to be Maisu Sheni. The Tikkun Chatan explains that after the Regalim, people would not take their surplus Maisu Sheni's home, but would leave them with relatives in Yerushalayim to spend. Therefore, it was presumed that the majority of money is found at any time in the year
in front of the Sokri Behema were Maisa Sheni. The mission continues that coins found in Har HaBayis are always assumed to be Chulin. The Tikkun Khan explains that even during the Regal, we assume they are Chulin since we go after the majority of the year, and the monies found during the Regal may have been lost before the Regal. The mission continues and says that monies found elsewhere in Yerushalayim are assumed to be Maisa Sheni during the Regalim and Chulin the rest of the year. So the coin collectors on the yacht tour are having a blast trying to figure out which chest a drop coin belonged to, and listened to the lecture on Maisa Sheni status of lost coins in Yerushalayim, until the waiter told him he couldn't recall if the fleishik dinner he served them came from the kosher store or the nine treif ones. Which reminds us that in the midst of a discussion regarding sveikas, the Gemara brings a brisa that teaches, if there are nine stores in town that sell nevela meat, and one store is selling shechta meat, if one bought meat from one of the stores but doesn't know which, he must be concerned for the possibility that he bought nevela. The Karban 8 explains that concerned means that the matter is not definite. He cannot eat the meat in question because it's possibly nevela, but he would not be chai malchus since it's not definite. This is based on the rule of kol kavul kamechsel mechsedami. Whatever is fixed in its place is treated as 50-50, so that the minority is treated as making up half of the total amount. The Gemara continues, Lunim says, hochen acharo, but where the meat was found in the street, and it cannot be determined from which store it came, we follow the majority. The Karban HaEid explains that since the majority of stores sell nevela, the found meat is assumed to be nevela, and one who eats it is chayav malchus. Dav Chaf, so the simmer Dav Chaf is a cafe, so here goes. The cafe, that must mean we're on Dav Chaf. The cafe came under attack from vultures scooping down and taking patrons' meat and dropping meat in its stead, which reminds the Gemara relates when Rav went down to Bava, Chamsum, Mekilin, Vachamra, Len, and he saw them acting leniently, so he ruled stringently for them. And one of the incidents brought, a servant was walking in the street carrying meat when a vulture came and snatched it from him and then cast it down in another place. The person went back to that other place to retrieve his meat and wanted to take it. Rav said to him, it's forbidden for you to eat that piece. For I say that perhaps the vulture had been carrying the meat of a nevela and cast it down, and it took that piece that was yours with it. Rav's ruling is based on the prohibition of basash yinizal min ha'ayin, meat that was hidden from the eye, on account of the concern that perhaps the meat was exchanged with a similar piece of non-kosher meat. So the cafe came under attack from vultures scooping down and taking patrons' meat and dropping meat in its stead, and attracted the attention of lost male and female sheep near Yerushalayim. Which reminds us, the next Mishnah states that a behema found between Yerushalayim and Migdal Eder, which is an area near Beis Lechem, or at that distance from Yerushalayim in any direction, Zecharim Olos, males are to be treated as Olos, Nekevos Zivchei Shlamim. Females will be treated as shlamim offerings. Rabbi Yudah says, "Harui pesachim v'sachim kodem regel shloshim yom." That which is fit for a pesach is to be used for a pesach if it's found 30 days or less before the regel. The Karban HaEid explains that if the animal was a male sheep or goat within its first year, it's assumed to have been consecrated as a pesach since the public study of Hilchos Pesach begins 30 days before the chag. The Tana Kamo, however, holds that people are especially careful with their pesach offerings, so there's no concern that this lost animal might be one. So the cafe came under attack from vultures scooping down and taking patrons' meat and dropping meat in its stead, and attracted the attention of lost male and female sheep near Yerushalayim when it made its delicious dough bread that was baked, fried, and baked again in honor of its opening day. Which reminds the Gemara discussed the Minchas Chavitin, a special mincha that's brought by Kohen the first time he performs the Avodah and brought daily by the Kohen Gadol. The pasuk states regarding its preparation, on a griddle with oil it shall be made, scalded shall you bring it, tufine, baked, minchas pitim takriv reich nechoach Hashem, a mincha offering broken to pieces, you shall offer it as a satisfying aroma to Hashem. The Gemara brings some halachos about when the dough is baked. The Tanna Kamma says, tufine tafena na. The word tufine means they shall be baked after they are partially cooked. The partial cooking is the frying of the dough. Rebbe says, tafena naya, they shall be baked while still attractive. The Tikkun Chatan explains that it should be baked before frying, since frying blackens them and makes them less attractive. Rabbi Dosa says, tafena riba, they shall be baked a lot. The Tikkun Chatan explains that Rabbi Dosa holds the requirements of both Tanaim, and they are baked twice, once before frying while the dough is still attractive, and then baked again after being fried when partially cooked. All right, now it's time to conclude our pop quiz, and this quiz will feature 15 questions. Here we go. Number one. Wish if you learned that the Torah given to Moshe Rabbeinu was white fire written on black fire. That's on Duff. Tezayin. Good. Number two. Which Duff did Malchus regarding the baking process for the Minchas Chavitin? That's on Duff. Chaf. Good. Number three. Which Duff did when the Rabbanim were goes said that there is no meat on the ashes of the Paraduma when they saw people were not using them anymore for medicinal purposes? That's on Duff. Chafav. Good. Number four. Which Duff did discuss the status of animals found wandering between Yerushalayim and Migdal Eder? That's on Duff. Chav. Good. Number five. Which stuff do we have in Malchok is whether the 10 menorahs that Shlomo Melch made that were next to Moshe Rabbeinu's were lit or not? That's on Duff. Yudches. Good. Number six. Which daf did Malchus regarding how many dibros were written on each of the luchos? That's on daf Tezayin. Good number 7. Which daf did we discuss the difference between Maisa Rokem and Maisa Choshev in the weaving of the parochas? That's on daf Chafav. Good number 8. Which daf did we know that besides the Shulchan and the Heichol, there were two more Shulchanas, one of marble when the Lechem of Honey was brought in, and one of gold when the Lechem of Honey was taken out? That's on daf Yidzayin. Good number 9. Wished up to learn that monies found in front of Sochri Behema are presumed to be Meister Shani funds, whereas in Harabais they're presumed to be Chulin. That's on Duff. Yotes. Good number 10. Wished up to learn about the story of Nachum Ish Gamzu. That's on Duff. Tezvav. Good number 11. Wished up to learn that Yehoyachin threw the keys of the base of Mikdash up to Shemaim, since Bnei Yisrael were no longer faithful to Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's on Duff. Yud Zayin. Good number 12. Which of the one that all spittle, all roke found in Yerushalayim had the din of Tahor except that which was found in the Shuk HaElyon? That's on Duff. Chafav. Good number 13. Which of the one that when it comes to coins found between chests, the quality is you go after the closest one, Ohakil, Mechzal, Mechzal, Lahachmir? That's on Duff. Yud Tes. Good number 14. Which of the one that when someone donates an unspecified amount of Lavona, the minimum shear is a comet? That's on Duff. Yudches. Good. And number 15, which of the one that if one is not sure if the meat he bought was from the kosher store or from the 9 nevela shops, the rule is kol kavul kamechzal mechzidami. That's on daf. Yudches. Excellent. Right. That concludes the pop quiz. This is Rabbi Avram Goldman Zichu wishing you a great day and great learning.